Journalist Celeste Headlee has guest hosted Here and Now and other NPR shows. She's also a consultant on race. There's her book, We Need to Talk, How to Have Conversations That Matter. And now, speaking of race, why everybody needs to talk about racism and how to do it. Something she's learned well. Celeste describes herself as a light-skinned black Jew, hearing things people wouldn't otherwise say, like the neighbor who asked her to pick up his mail so those people, he said, nodding toward a black neighborhood, wouldn't know he was away. She said, okay, but I'm one of those people. In her book, Celeste speaks to scientists and researchers who all say the only way to have enraging conversations about race, especially with a racist, is to listen and ask good questions. Even neo-Nazi Derek Black, godson of former KKK leader David Duke, says a couple of caring young people with good questions at college changed his mind. Celeste Headlee joins us now. Welcome back.
Hi.
There's so much here, but lots of it is science. And the title says everyone has to talk about race. You're right. Everyone is biased. Explain.
So for the purposes of conversation, the definition of racist that I use is someone who makes assumptions about somebody else, either positive or negative, based on their perceived race. And by that definition, that's all of us. And that has been tested again and again in a scientific capacity. It's also been tested during surveys and observational studies. We all make assumptions about other people. And that's important because it means that when you enter this conversation, you're not coming from a place above, ready to tell somebody else how wrong they are. You're coming from a place of, you know, we're human and we have a tendency to make these assumptions about other people, and it's wrong, and here's why.
So roadblocks first. What do you say, Celeste Headlee, to the black person who says, that's not my job to still talk to white people about race? Or the white liberal who thinks, yes, that's a good idea. Everyone should do that but me, of course, because I'm a white liberal.
Yeah, to the black person, I say, you're right. It's not actually your job. But if you have the capacity to do it, this is how it is done. To the white liberal, I say, it absolutely is your job. Absolutely. And I want you to start with your family and friends. You know, what we're seeing a lot of is people avoiding their family members who are racist or say inappropriate things. But you know what? Scientifically speaking, the most persuasive person is somebody that they care about and who looks like them, who resembles them. And that's you.
But how do you do this? I mean, start with the find common ground. What do you say?
Yeah, so surprisingly enough, I mean, I think surprising to most people, we're less polarized than we think. Decades and decades of surveys, public opinion surveys, have shown that there's some basic issues on which lots of people agree. And you can start there. For example, most people agree that things are harder for Black Americans than they are for white Americans. You can start with, would you agree that it's harder for a Black American than a white American? And most likely they will say yes. Now, you will always encounter people who want to have the argument and are not open to an actual conversation. And I say, walk away. You know, it's not worth your time. This is going to be a tough conversation. And therefore, you want to invest your energy and your focus in someone who's actually willing to talk.
And you can practice. You say, write down what you might say if you were competing on a debate team before you have a discussion. If you believe Black Americans deserve reparations, write down your most persuasive arguments in support and against, and really imagine that you're that other person so that you are starting to be in their shoes. And there are other things. You give us so many examples of things you've done. An argument blows up and you back off and say, wait a minute, I want to talk about this without arguing. And I read talking about something you're proud of makes you more open-minded. So you start first. Tell me the best thing that happened to you in the past month and I'll do the same.
Yeah, we know through a number of studies that if you get someone to think about, you know, their ideal self, their higher values, it actually makes them open to correction. It makes them more willing to be corrected and be criticized or to find out that they're wrong. Yeah. So use it to your advantage. You can say exactly what I said to them. You don't have to hide it at all. You can say, this is the trick, because knowing the trick doesn't make the magic not work.
Well, and you don't want to be, you know, you're not in some Trojan horse, you know, trying to come in and fool somebody. You really have to have made that commitment to having, you know, I want to find out more about this person's humanity. Another thing you use is the three questions. You stopped another argument and said, wait a minute, I bet we could find something we have in common.
Yeah, in three questions or less. And so, yeah, we ended up agreeing on the fact that dogs are better than people. I think the other thing we agreed on, what was the best season of the year. But, you know, people will agree on things like tacos, right? I mean, who doesn't like a taco? And the importance here is not to diminish the conversation. This is not to say that, you know, you can laugh things off. The important thing to remember is that establishing an empathic bond is what changes people's minds. All of your statistics, all of your facts that you have saved up, there's really no evidence that drowning someone in statistics actually changed their perspective at all. But finding that, oh, I actually kind of like this person, I can understand them, that is incredibly powerful. Mm-hmm. And so you just have to find something on which you can connect. And then you can maybe move forward with the conversation.
Can you give us another example, Celeste, of when you were in conversation? Because it happens to you on airplanes. It happens. This is what you say, practice, by the way, by asking complete strangers, hey, tell me something about yourself. So can you give us another brief example of an encounter you had with someone that was going south and a tool you used?
Yeah, so I had another conversation in which the person did not know my racial background, and they began talking about how irritating it is when people of color always want to make everything about race. And so I began to say, hey, I'm a person of color, and, you know, is it okay if I explain to you why race comes up so often? And they said, no, it is not okay for you to explain to me. I already know. And she was clearly getting angry very, very quickly. And I said, I want to stop here for a second because it looks like I'm making you angry. That is not my intention in any way, shape, or form. So let's talk about something else. You've got a tattoo on your forearm. I can't see from here what it is. Can I look at it? Mm-hmm. And we completely went off on a different tangent. And lo and behold, about 10 minutes later, we came back around to the conversation, and she was then more open to it. And she said, you know what, I'm sorry, I get defensive because it seems to me like I've been targeted and victimized before, but thank you for being patient with me. Mm. They don't always go that way. Sometimes it just ends with somebody be getting mad, and I say, well, okay, we're not going to agree on this, and we part ways.
But I love another example you give of questions. Everybody knows when you have an argument with someone, how can you think that, right?
Yeah.
Which immediately knocks back any opportunity for conversation. One of the questions you use is, can you help me understand that?
Yeah. I mean, there's two things going on there. First, human beings universally, and you probably know this as well as I as a journalist, Robin, is that, you know, when you get to a new town and you're trying to do a report on something that's happened there, one of the most powerful things you can say is, can you help me? People respond to that. But also, you're inviting them to tell you about themselves. And that's also inherently pleasurable for a human being, is to talk about themselves, their beliefs, what they think. So that question accomplishes both of those things.
Yeah. Just one more exercise. You give a beautiful example of the wonderful Don Gagne in NPR allowing a 68-year-old white man from the Midwest to express his thoughts. This was in 2017, as uncomfortable as they were. And this man said, if you want a job, they seem to give the blacks the first crack at it. If you want help from the government, if you're white, you don't get it. If you're black, you do. Neither of those things are true. What do you do?
Yeah, the wrong approach would be to say you're wrong.
Right.
The better thing for him to have done is talk about his own personal experience. And if I were talking to him, I would invite him to do that. I would say, wow, okay, the statistics are really against you, but tell me why you think this. Has something happened to you? Did you lose a job recently? Very often, these sort of racist examples and these stereotypes that people have are not, they're built on air. Mm-hmm. And so when you dig it down, when you ask them, when you invite them to articulate exactly what their story is, what these beliefs are founded on, you're leading them to make the realization. Self-persuasion is so much more powerful and effective than persuasion from an exterior source. So essentially, you are inviting them by telling their story to persuade themselves, and it works.
Well, listeners, we've all just attended what would be just a tiny portion of one of Celeste Headlee's workshops, but just great information in her new book, Speaking of Race, Why Everybody Needs to Talk About Racism and How to Do It. Celeste Headlee, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you, Robin.